usually I don't give a lesson a particular heading, but today I found myself putting a title at the top of the first page of notes, and it was entitled Dreamer Awake! ! The word for you for today, actually for any day of your life, is enthusiasm. Enthusiasm. To awaken the enthusiasm for your life, because you cannot fulfill your destiny until you become an enthusiastic, awake, alert, alive, and turned on person. It simply cannot happen any other way. The good that you seek is not going to awaken you. You will awaken, and from that experience will it produce the good that you seek. And when I say to you awaken, I do not mean to stop dreaming. Quite the contrary. To awaken and to once again begin to dream your dreams. Have you stopped dreaming? Have you settled down into what is and given up all hope for what could be? Well, if you have, that means you're normal. Or like most people who inhabit this earth. And let's face it, most people simply don't change. They don't change. But you can change. It does not matter whether anyone else in your life is changing or whether the person seated beside you is going to hear one thing that I say to you tonight. You can change. Now, you're not going to change when your ship comes in. Because your ship is already here and you are on it. It's called the Earth. It's that magnificent spaceship that you are traveling through this marvelous universe upon. And I seriously doubt if you will escape the gravity of the Earth until you awaken and become alert, alive, and enthusiastic. Walter Malone wrote a poem once that inspired me greatly in the early moments, in the early dawn of my awakening. It's called Opportunity, and let me read Opportunity to you. They do me wrong who say I come no more when once I knock and fail to find you in. Every day I stand outside your door and bid you wake and rise to fight and win. Wail not for precious chances passed away. Weep not for golden ages on the wane. Each night I burn the records of the day. At sunrise, every soul is born again. Laugh like a boy at splendors that have sped. To vanished joys, be blind and deaf and dumb. My judgments seal the dead past with its dead, but never bind the moment yet to come. Though deep in mire, wring not your hands and weep. I lend my arm to all who say, I can. No shame-faced outcast ever sank so deep, but yet might rise and be again a man. Dost thou behold thy lost youth all aghast? Dost reel from righteous retribution's blow? Then turn from blotted archives of the past and find the future's pages, white as snow. Art thou a mourner? Rouse thee from thy spell. Art thou a sinner? Sins may be forgiven. Each morning gives thee wings to flee from hell. Each night a star to guide your feet to heaven. What are the wings that will help you to flee from hell? You know what they are. You've always known that you can soar on the wings of imagination. How many times have you done that? How many times have you in your imagination just been lifted up and out and sailed right out into the sky, into the universe? Remember the phoenix that was a bird that consumed itself by fire and then rose, renewed, or resurrected from its own ashes? Well, my friend, you are the phoenix. You're a strange bird. You are. And you have consumed yourself. Your life You've been through the fire. But at any moment that you desire, you can rise renewed, resurrected from your own ashes. Remember the story from Genesis, the story of Jacob's dream, where a ladder was set up from earth to heaven, and the angels of God ascended and descended upon that ladder. Remember that story? Well, angels are typified as beings with wings, remember? Well, in reality, angels are divine ideas that appear in us as our creative imagination. And these angels, this higher imagination, this creative intelligence, will direct and guide us, will lift us up on that ladder that reaches into that fourth dimensional consciousness within us. But only when one wishes to rise up out of the ashes of the past. If you're sick and tired of what is and would like to move forward into what can be, that's the rising up. And the phoenix of you, this indestructible self, can always sail and soar. In Napoleon Hill's magnificent book, Think and Grow Rich, step 5 toward riches is entitled Imagination. And Napoleon Hill wrote, "All the breaks you need in life awake within your imagination. Imagination is the workshop of your mind, capable of turning mind energy into accomplishment and wealth." I hope that you will once again read this chapter, as a matter of fact, the whole book. And one of the things that you will remember again is that your subconscious or your subjective mind cannot distinguish between what is imaginary and what is real. It sees them both the same and reproduces the mirror image of what you imagine in your life. Now, if you continue to see your life as it is, then your subjective mind, this powerful creative force within you, will continue to reproduce your life as it is. But if in your imagination, if you can outsmart your subjective mind and create new images and new patterns, it will reproduce them as though they actually exist, because to your subjective mind, they do exist because you have put them there. And this is the pattern, the blueprint for what lies beyond you. Edmund Sennett wrote, "Nowhere is man more godlike than in the limitless scope of his imagination, which releases him from bondage to material and finite things. It breaks a path into an entirely new world and opens before him a vista of such boundless extent that it makes of him a different being, a creator, not a creature merely. How would you like to be the creator of your future? How would you like to cooperate with an infinite intelligence in the reproduction of events that you have not yet experienced, that have been beyond you to this moment? Would you like that? It's your destiny, and as a matter of fact, your good cannot come because your ship comes in, but only because your imagination begins to come alive and begins to explore new possibilities for you." Last week, there was an article that captured my imagination, and you can understand why when I share it with you. It's entitled, "Rooftop Reverend's $14 Million Dream Rises." And of course, it's from Garden Grove, California, and it's speaking of the Reverend Robert Schuller. Now, you know the Reverend Robert Schuller. As a matter of fact, everyone in America, with the exception of one or two people somewhere in the mountains of West Virginia, everyone knows Robert Schuller. And he has made absolutely certain that everyone knows of him and of his dream. His dream has become America's dream. And people from all over America are sending in checks, large and small, to complete his dream. And I think that's absolutely magnificent. Don't you? There's nothing wrong with that. Because he has let his dream rise up, and he has sent it forth, and he has spoken the word very clearly about his dream. He has clarified it. He has made it quite clear. And it must come to pass, and it is. And there's the picture of it, and the story tells about this dream. This marvelous building. The pulpit will stand 12 feet up on a crimson marble platform. There'll be glass so that all that you can see is the sky. The balconies will seat 2,000 people, half of the building's capacity. The choir loft will seat 500. Most of the churches in America would like to have 500 people in the congregation. He's got 500 people in the choir. But listen to this. It will give me the feeling I've wanted and missed since I came into a building, Schuller said. See, for a long time he wasn't in a building. I began this ministry in 1955 with my wife as the only member. For want of money, for want of property, for want of a place, I spent 6 years on the rooftop of a snack bar at a drive-in theater. For 6 years, there was nothing between my eyeballs and the continuous dynamic view of the shifting clouds in the sky. And now, isn't it significant that what he saw each day when he was on that rooftop of that drive-in is now what you will see when the building is completed? Is that a coincidence? No. This man is a dreamer. He has great imagination, and he knows how to make his dreams come true. Well, what about your dreams? Are you a dreamer? Or are you still awake? Are you still caught up in the daydreams of the past? Are you still letting your imagination picture all kinds of fantasies? And by fantasies, I mean, have you reached the point in your life that you cannot live in your life, and so you go over here and create an imaginary world and imaginary relationships that you escape into? That's not creative, because you're not going to build that life. You're escaping from the present off into something, and then from time to time you come back to, quote, reality, unquote. That's fantasizing. Creative imagination is when you build a dream with your imagination that is so real and vivid to you that it must come true, and it will. It has no choice, because the whole universe responds and confirms the visions of your consciousness. Remember the dreams of Joseph. Joseph's dreams saved his life and later all of Egypt. His dreams gave him direction and power and a life fulfilled. And I'm not talking about his dreams that occurred in his sleep in the night. Those dreams were indicative of creative imagination, the dreaming of a fully awake person who wished to be whole and knew how to accomplish his wholeness. The story of Joseph is the story of each one of us that would like to be whole. Would you like to be a whole person? You cannot be a whole person until your creative imagination is consciously and deliberately brought into expression. Marcus Aurelius said, a man's life is dyed the color of his imagination. And remember Joseph's coat of many colors? And Joseph stands for the creative faculty of imagination. It is your imagination that will give color and form and shape to your life in the very same way that the Reverend Robert Schuller's imagination has already brought into expression a magnificent structure and the equivalent experience and a very large and powerful congregation without any additional effort on his part. You see, Dr. Schuller is not going to have to sign the note for that building. You want to bet? The dictionary defines imagine as to form a mental picture or image of, to create in the mind, or to employ the imagination. Oh, I love that. To put the imagination to work, to employ it. Imagine comes from the Latin meaning to picture to oneself. To picture to oneself, that means a conscious and deliberate action or effort of your mind to picture to yourself that which you would like to experience yourself. And this is to foresee, meaning to see or to know beforehand, to anticipate or to envision. To foresee means to know of an occurrence in advance of its coming into actual existence. Did you know that everything that exists upon this earth today, as a fact, everything that is created, including the electric can opener that you use tonight to open up that can of soup, was created in someone's mind. It was envisioned. They could foresee it. Before it was on the marketplace, it was seen in someone's mind. Is that correct? Of course it is. It was a mental image produced by the imagination. And so is every worthwhile life that has ever been lived. People who live dynamic, expressive, fulfilled lives do not come into that experience by chance. It does not just happen. It can only occur through some understanding of the nature of their minds and of this universe, and by learning how to cooperate with the superintelligence, and by actually deliberately practicing and working to bring a new experience into being. Now, of course, we're talking about the creative use of the imagining power. Unfortunately, most people use their imagination to see over and over again what they have already seen and have created. So in this way, they become locked into what already is for them. And as they're locked into what is, they shut themselves out of what could be for them. When this happens, a person becomes afraid of the unknown. And they become more and more comfortable with what is. And by that I mean they settle down into a comfort zone from which they are afraid to emerge. All progress, whether individual or collective, is because someone dared to perceive a mental image never before seen in reality. It just occurred to me an example of a person being in a comfort zone is an alcoholic. And you would say, why, surely every alcoholic would like to get well. No. They are afraid to emerge from that particular comfort zone. But when two other people or more like unto them who have emerged, and who can go to them and share an image of a life that is superior, a life that they can experience when they recover from their alcoholism, if that dream can be shared and can be taken into the mind of that practicing alcoholic, then you have a healing. Sobriety begins. Not only the physical sobriety, but all of the other delightful, exciting experiences that begin to emerge in the life of this person who seems to be resurrected, as was the phoenix, from the ashes of their own self-destruction. Albert Einstein said, imagination is more important than knowledge, for knowledge is limited, whereas imagination embraces the entire world, stimulating progress, giving birth to evolution. Your mind is a goal-seeking and goal-achieving mechanism. And if you don't give it new goals, if you don't give it new worlds to conquer, it will keep on conquering what it has already conquered by maintaining the status quo. And that then becomes the most unexciting, unappealing life that you can imagine. This is where all dis-ease and stagnation come into our experience. Now, you have been letting your imagination sail and soar by writing down all the things that you would like to do now and for the rest of your life. Have you been doing that? Well, I've been doing it. And let's don't stop doing it. Let that assignment continue day after day. As a matter of fact, you will find that it will begin to increase in momentum after the lesson tonight. I certainly haven't completed the exciting process of letting my mind reveal to me all the things that I want to do. As a matter of fact, since I've been standing here, I've thought of two or three. And I need to write them down. Because last week I thought of some, and they were so exciting, I thought, well, when I get back to my pad, it's right over there, I will write them down. And by the time I got there, I forgot them. And I know this happened to some of you. It's very important to capture these wild imaginings, to put them down, to put them in cages or categories. Because you might think that you're going to remember, but you won't. Keep that pad and paper handy, because these imaginings must come together in bunches so that they will begin to take form and shape. This is a very important quotation by Rufus Jones. I hope you will hear it. Getting your imagination captured is almost the whole of life. The minute the eyes of your heart are enlightened, the minute your imagination gives you the picture of your path, your goal, your aim, it is as good as done. The way to become the architect of your fate, the captain of your soul, is to have your imagination captured. Last night, some of us here were speaking to an architect, a very remarkable person. And he was telling us how he works, the process of creating a new structure. And he said, what I do is in my imagination, I approach the property. I have already seen it or have pictures of it. I know the property. And in my imagination, I walk toward that property and I ask my mind, what kind of building needs to be here in this place? What kind of form fits? What is to take place in this structure? Who is to inhabit it? What kinds of persons will be there? What purpose will it serve? And I ask my mind, and I begin to look, and suddenly I see it unfolds. There begins to grow in my consciousness the structure that is to be. And I write it down. I must capture what I see. And what I see becomes the drawings, if you will, of the future structure that is there. Would you like to become the architect of a new structure, of a newly structured, of a newly ordered and ordained experience in your own life? Well, you are that architect. And yes, inspiration is there, but you must capture these wild birds of fancy that fly through and do not light anywhere. And you must reach up and pick them off and put them down and put them on paper so that they begin to form lines that take shape in your thought. Voss Kettering, who was the inventive genius that you're so familiar with, wanted to prove so conclusively the power of visualization, of imagination, and goal setting that he bet a friend $5,000 that if he would put a beautiful ornate birdcage in the foyer of his house, that by and by one day, his friend would put a bird in the birdcage. And he told his friend in advance what the obstacles would be. He said, now I'm going to tell you what you're going to run into. All kinds of people are going to say strange things about that birdcage. And one day you're just going to have to give up and put a bird in that birdcage, and when you do, it's going to cost you $5,000. Except you can't tell anyone this is the result of a bet. His friend took the bet and put the ornate birdcage in the foyer of his house, and friends came by his home, as they often did. He had many parties there. And some of them would say, gosh, this is a magnificent birdcage. It's the most beautiful birdcage I've ever seen. Where did you get that birdcage? And he would come up with different stories. One that he went to a furniture mart with a decorator and looked at all the catalogs and picked this one out because it tied in with the decor of the rest of the house. And invariably they would say, well, where's your bird? And he would say, I don't have a bird. No. He didn't die. No, I really didn't intend to get a bird. Well, everyone is hung up on something. With me, it's bird cages. And so he kept seeing the bird cage and seeing the bird cage. And he kept seeing his guests all see what a beautiful bird cage he had, but no bird. And he finally succumbed and put a bird in the birdcage. It cost him $5,000, but he couldn't resist it any longer. Now be careful what kind of birdcages you hang up in your life. Because if you put a cage there, eventually it's going to be occupied by a bird. If you will now examine the long list of desires that you've written down, and they are desires only at this point because you haven't yet made them goals. Those things that you've written down are not yet goals. Don't call them your goals because they're not. But you will see that they fall into several categories or compartments. Now, I know that you cannot separate family goals from work goals any more than you can separate physical goals from mental goals, because they're all a part of each other, interrelated, interconnected. And this is the whole person concept that we're working with. However, by making your desires and plans come together for each compartment of your life, you are developing the whole person. And you will then begin to move out into an exciting, many-faceted life of purpose and of renewed meaning. The reason why some goals have never been reached is that they were isolated goals, a goal here off to itself. And that person was working in only one compartment and on only one goal and failed to establish the connecting and supporting goals. I can give you a classic example. A person who has decided to lose weight, and they work to lose weight, and that's a worthwhile goal. The way to do it is to decide that you're going to lose weight and set it up as a goal, but also to have a goal for a new wardrobe, for new friends, new adventures, a whole new look. Do you have a feeling for what I'm talking about? A weight loss itself is not all that exciting. You can't even imagine it. But if you couple it with all of the other things that relate to it, the whole family of things in that category, you will see that they become self-supporting. They influence each other. There's a movement of power that is discernible in your own mind. And some of you right now are aware of why you haven't lost the weight. But back to the categories or compartments. The first category we call career, and career contains all the desires or dreams of your chosen pursuit, your life's work. The second category is financial. A goal could be getting out of debt. I once knew a person who read Think and Grow Rich, and there's one thing that I hope you don't do when you read Think and Grow Rich, and that is to set that goal, as it tells you to here, of earning or of having $50,000 in your possession by January the 1st. It's already very close to that time. I know a person who set a goal for $50,000 by January the 1st, and he only owed $15,000 at the time. Now, was that a realistic goal? No, first things first. The first goal should be the goal of getting out of debt. Don't set a goal of climbing Pike's Peak while you are down in a diving suit 200 feet below the level of the ocean. First, come back to sea level and then start from that point. So let your goals be realistic. You can set a goal of retiring at a certain time with a certain net worth, but goals that lead to that. Category number three is spiritual. One goal in that category could be to become a part of a mastermind group, to have a conscious spiritual experience, to tithe effectively, or to really learn how to practice spiritual principles in all of your affairs. Category number four is physical, and this could be to lose or gain weight, to improve one's physical appearance by acquiring a new wardrobe, or learning how to use makeup, or taking up exercising, or jogging, or joining a health spa, or all of these and many other things. Category number five is mental. This could include the goal of a perfect memory for names, or the elimination of certain erroneous mental attitudes, adding the positive, opposite equivalent, or knowledge acquired, or skills that you wish to add. Category number six is family. And a goal could be changing roles in the family, altering relationships with children. For example, if you have children over 21 years of age and they have left home and you're still crying about it, that should be a part of your goal setting. Or if you're the child and you're over 21 years of age and your parents are still crying, you see what I'm talking about? To break those ties, to form new relationships with the people who exist. Your roles have changed with time. Now let your goals be to bring your roles up to date. It might include goals for educating your children. Category number seven is personal relationships, and one such goal could be developing a better relationship with a spouse, having a mastermind relationship with your spouse. Or it could be a goal of getting a divorce. from your spouse. Now, don't go home. And say that Jack told me you hear what I'm saying. If you are in a stagnant, static situation, do whatever is necessary. Obviously, your first movement is toward the recreation of what exists. And give it everything you've got. And then if that doesn't work, then you can set another goal. A goal of getting a spouse if you don't have one. One woman told me not long ago that she had set a goal for the acquisition of a husband. And so she created the kind of person that she wanted in her mind. And then she said, I have created a powerful vacuum. And I said, what is it? And she said, I only sleep in half of the bed. Category number 8. Things I want to do. Take a cruise next May. That's what I want to do. Or a trip to Hawaii, or climb a mountain, or go deep sea fishing, or visit the Grand Canyon, or write a book, whatever it is that you want to do. All the things that you want to do, put them in that category, things I want to do. And category number 9 are things I want to be. Rich. Whatever that means to me, and I'm teasing, but take voice lessons if you want to sing. Or to become an accomplished public speaker. Or to become an achiever. Category number 10 is things I want to have. My dream house, new furniture in the dining room, or a new watch, a new car, a snowblower. Category number 11, miscellaneous, and that means whatever doesn't fit into any of the other groups, put it here. And category number 12 is the special category because I call it feelings. There's no substitute for feeling good. And to set your goal for feeling good about all of your goals. In fact, feeling good about everything. Living your days and your nights, being excited, feeling alive. How would you feel if you had accomplished each of these goals? Think about it. How would you feel if it had already happened to you? Then set the goal of feeling that way now. And if you will feel that way about your goal, you will experience your goal. That's the most powerful thing that you can do. Speaking of goals and dream houses, a champion goal-setting friend of mine called while I was making notes for this class this morning, and the girl that answered the phone said, gosh, Jack is so busy, he just can't talk to anyone. But he said, I've got to talk to Jack. And I answered, and he said, Jack, I just had to tell you about my miracle, about my goal-setting miracle. And I said, Don, do you know that I'm right in the midst of making some notes on my goal-setting class? And he said, I didn't even know you were doing one. In one of the classes that I did some time ago, Don wrote down a description of his dream home. And his dream home is a very beautiful, expensive, two-story house on a lake hidden by trees. And he described it to himself. Now, in time, he bought for himself a smaller but still quite elegant house. Yesterday morning, early, some of his appointments were canceled and his plans for the day were changed. And just at that moment, a realtor called him and said, there's a special house that I want you to see. And Don said, I've got a house. You ought to know I have a house. You sold me the house I've got. And this fellow said, but this is a special house. And Don said, it's a waste of time. I have a house, and it's not a good time to buy a house. But they went anyhow to look at the house. They turned off the road, down a lane through the tall trees, and there it was. Exactly as he had described it on paper, and captured it in his mind. There was his dream home. Beautiful, two stories tall, with ducks on the lake chattering, quacking, and diving. He couldn't believe his eyes. But it was too expensive, of course. Maybe not, said the realtor. The owners need to sell it right now. Right now, an immediate sale will get you a bargain price. But Don already had a house, and besides, he wasn't certain that he could make the arrangements with the bank, and they went straight to the bank, and at the price that was being quoted, there was no problem, provided that he could come up with $50,000 in addition to the other cash that he had. Well, Don put his house on the market. This was yesterday morning. In 2 hours, his house had been sold to a couple who just happened to have $50,000 in cash. You believe it? I know it. And Don said, anything we dare dream and then implement with enthusiasm and action will begin to unfold in the most natural and remarkable way. This happened because it was a goal and a dream, and because Don is a dreamer. And more than that, I said to him, Don, I have never ever in my life caught you in the lotus position. Meaning that he dreams his dreams, but then he goes into action. He moves. He goes out into his days and his nights doing the things that ought to be done by him, practicing spiritual principles in all of his affairs. Remember that a vision held in the mind with feeling becomes a fact. And whatever the mind of man can conceive or form in the mind or imagine, whatever you can become pregnant with, that's what conceive means. And believe or accept as true or real will become your experience. Believe means to give permission to. It means to consider dear or beloved. Take your dreams and call them dear and beloved. Esteem them. And trust them and invite them into your experience. You see, you must invite them to come in. And if you do this, you can achieve or accomplish successfully. The word achieve means in the French to bring to a head. It will come to a head in the most effortless way. The effort is in the imagining and in the believing and in the holding true and steady upon the course that you have chosen. So if you would take your goals, and by goals I mean these things that you have decided that you wish to do or to be or to have in the balance of your life, if you would take them and convert them to facts or actual living experiences, a process must be followed. And the first step is to decide, to make up your mind what you want, remembering that no one but you can decide for you, and no one can dream for you. God can inspire you, but the choice is always yours. Now take your dreams and put them together in the natural categories or compartments that I've outlined, or other compartments of your own choice. And you're doing this because you want to be a whole person, is that right? And a fulfilled person. And as you begin to put your dreams together, believe and feel that you're putting your life together, because whatever the mind of man can conceive or become pregnant with, it will experience. Your subconscious mind does not know the difference between your imaginings and that which is real. Don's subconscious mind took his dream, because he knows how to do it, and created the equivalent in the home that he's moving into. Give permission to these experiences. A friend of mine only last year discussed with me his dream of being an artist, and I asked him if he had any talent, and he said he did, but he said it's raw talent. And I said, well, why don't you take your raw talent and let someone who can instruct you bring it into a creative ability, connect it to real creative flair. You see, there is much unrewarded genius upon this earth. The world is full of educated derelicts and of people who have raw talent. But raw talent won't do it. It really won't. So my friend took to himself as a teacher an artist of great ability, a person of some renown in that part of the country. Now, among other things that his teacher had as an accomplishment was national recognition that he achieved one time for a painting of a cow. If you can imagine someone achieving national recognition for painting a cow. But this was an unusual cow. The painting was so perfect that it was reproduced on the cover of a cattleman's magazine. And the farmers who saw it nearly flipped when they saw the picture of a perfect cow. They'd never seen a picture of a perfect cow. And I asked my friend, well, how did he paint a perfect cow? And he said, well, he went to the Cattlemen's Association in Kansas City. And he found out what elements were desirable in a cow. And he took each of the special qualities and put them together in a composite photograph. He got photographs of a lot of different cows. And he took the hind quarters of one cow, and I guess the tail of another, and the head of another cow. And he took all these pieces and put them together. And then he painted what he saw, reproducing in visual form what the world has never seen before, the only perfect cow. Well, I don't think that any one of us here wishes to paint a perfect cow. But you can certainly create, in your imagination, a more nearly perfect life than the one that you have yet demonstrated. Is that not correct? As a matter of fact, you've already started. The brushstrokes are already there. The color, the form, and the shape, you have the first steps. Now put it together in a composite picture. Take each of these categories and put them together so that your life is forming in perfect ways. A whole experience begins to take form and shape. Now this is not the end of it. Next week, we will show you how to immerse this perfect composite picture into a universal plastic substance that will make it come alive. Clarence Buddington Kellen said, I believe that I have discovered the one great moving and compelling force which makes every man what he becomes in the end. This, I believe, is the greatest force in the universe. I believe all other causes are secondary to it. It is so powerful that the slightest human effort cannot be put forth until it has done its work. And if it should suddenly be annihilated from the world, all activity would come to a standstill, and humanity would become a mass of automatons moving about in meaningless circles. This force is not love. It is not religion. It is not virtue. It is not ambition. For none of these could exist an hour without it. It is your imagination.